This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The Revolution with Juan McCartney is sponsored by Bon Vivants, Burger King, CFAL, CG Atlantic General, Commonwealth Bank, Fidelity Bank of Bahamas, the Jeff Rogers Basketball Camp, J.S. Johnson, NUA Insurance Agents and Brokers, Popeyes, Ross Electric Motors, the Water and Sewage Corporation, and Wilmax Pharmacy.
Afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. I believe a little later, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Gregory Pinto about different men's health issues, particularly to do with genital health, etc. And so we'll be doing that. But before we move on to that, I want to do something at least in this first hour. And I'm not trying to be mean-spirited. I'm not trying to be obtuse about anything. But I sincerely want to take a canvas of how many people, including if you're out there in Long Island, think Adrian Gibson should resign from Parliament. I've known Adrian Gibson a long time. And I do wish him the best, and I hope that he has the capacity and the will and the energy and the finances to vigorously defend himself against the charges that have been leveled before him. But as far as the outcome of his court case, that to me is a non-issue in terms of whether he should resign from Parliament now. And I'll be the first to go. Again, I've known Adrian a long time. I want the best for him. In terms of him being a member of Parliament for Long Island and whether this damages our friendship moving forward, that may be the case. But I have to speak honestly as a journalist and an analyzer of public affairs and current affairs and say that I believe he should resign. I believe he should have already done so. All right? I believe he should have done so the day after he got charged and said, I'm going to focus my energy on dealing with this. I really can't serve the people of Long Island in this capacity, and so I'm going to be done, right? So let's start at the top, and you're going to go, well, Juan, and I go, I know all the things you're going to say to me, right? And I'm going to say this, and I'll explain that here's why I say this. All that's wrapped up in ego, right? And I'm not naive. I'm human, all right? Ego plays a big – listen to me carefully. Carefully. This is not a knock. This is just reality. Anybody who aspires to be in the House of Assembly has a healthy ego. They may have a lot of other issues going on, but they certainly have a healthy ego. You cannot have an unhealthy ego or not a firm sense of ego and self and think that you are worth something and that you bring something to the table and run for the House of Assembly. You're just lying if you say otherwise. Anyone who wants to be, Adrian has had made no qualms about, he thinks he should have been a cabinet minister when Minus won. Anyone who accepts a cabinet appointment, who thinks that they can do that job at such a high level in the country, they have a healthy ego, okay? So there's a lot of ego involved. There's a lot of egos involved in the House of Assembly. You see it on display all the time. The consideration that I am most told that says Adrian Gibson shouldn't resign is that what if he's innocent, right? And so that, too, is a matter of ego, all right? So ego plays a part in it. You're not going to go and accept the nomination if you don't have a healthy ego. No one who aspires to be prime minister does not have an extremely healthy ego. No one who leads an organization does not have a healthy ego. I have a healthy ego. I wouldn't come on this show and talk about it and talk about things and give my opinion and state things as I do if I did not have a really healthy ego, okay? Now, a lot of people say, well, there's arrogance. No, what you're hearing with me is not arrogance, or call it what you want. I really don't care. It's confidence, All right. And that's fed a lot by my ego, but my ego's fed a lot by the fact that I have a particular set of skills that I know I'm good with, that I know are at the top of my game, and I got no problem coming on this radio and displaying it or in the newspaper displaying it. So there's ego involved with all of it. We're humans, there's ego involved. Ego says, I don't want to look bad by resigning. And that's your ego, all right? And that's always a consideration. But if you let your ego be the sole consideration in making these sorts of decisions, you're often going to fall on your face. Because some things are bigger than how you feel about yourself, how you feel people view you, etc. So the first thing is, what if he's innocent? If he resigns, people are going to say his political career is over because people are going to think, and then he, what if he's innocent and he resigns? People are going to think his political career is over and it's not fair to him. All right? What makes you believe his political career is not over now? Like, who have you canvassed to say that there's still this huge level of faith in him publicly or in Long Island? I'm questioning that, okay? So that's the first thing, right? The next thing you're going to say to me is, no, he shouldn't resign because he's innocent until proven guilty, all right? So, again, that has nothing to do with the Westminster Conventions, where people resign because they don't feel as though they have a proper ability to represent their constituency to the fullest effect because of what they have hanging over them. So that's I'm going to go through all the arguments you make for me, right? So yeah, he's innocent until proven guilty, and I've said this before. So read your constitution. If he's found guilty, he doesn't have to resign. That's A. If he's found guilty and is sentenced to 12 months or more in prison, the resignation is taken out of his hands. All right? The resignation isn't something that kicks in when you meet the full extent of the law that disqualifies you from serving in Parliament. The resignation is for before that. If you're found guilty and you're sentenced to 12 months or more in prison, you don't have to worry about resigning. You're done. Your seat's vacated. Automatic. So the resignation is for those other considerations that come in before that, that the Westminster system has given us example after example after example after example about, right? So people in Boris Johnson, the UK Prime Minister's own party, have called for him to resign repeatedly, put a no confidence vote in him because some of his senior officials had parties while they were having the COVID lockdowns. He did not resign, but people in his own party called for him to resign. Quite a number of the MPs in the House of Assembly, the House of Commons, voted for no confidence in him, in his own party. So Westminster isn't about the ultimate threshold of law. Westminster is about conventions, about the concept of honor and representation. The Constitution outlines when his seat would be vacated. So if we're waiting for a possible guilty verdict and a possible guilty verdict with a prison sentence to kick in, the resignation question doesn't really arise when the ultimate threshold is met. It's taken out of your hands. All right? You have no choice. A resignation is about choice, what you choose to do, not what the law prescribes that you do. So I don't get this argument that we got to consider where the Constitution kicks in order to consider his resignation. Because, again, a resignation is about what you do before you have no choice. All right? So right now, he has a choice. And I'm saying what informs those choices. So the next thing you're going to say to me is, well, if everybody resigned after there was an allegation, right? I don't know who everybody is because it's only happened a few times. If everybody resigns after there's some, let's not even say allegation, because Peter Turnquist resigned when he was just named in a lawsuit from cabinet, and the threshold for parliament is a damn sight higher than the threshold for being appointed to cabinet. Okay? Anyone who's in the House of Assembly can be appointed to cabinet, besides a speaker, of course. anyone who's over the age of 30 who's Bahamian, I think it's 30, right, can be appointed to the Senate, and they can be placed in cabinet. The threshold for being in parliament is higher than the requirement for being in cabinet. You can't tell me no different. Yes, a cabinet minister has different responsibilities, but being in parliament trumps being in cabinet. You don't have to be in cabinet. All right? You could, but you can be removed from cabinet. You can be invited to be asked to be in cabinet. Parliament, you're elected. There is a very high threshold for you to be removed. So cabinet and so parliament's more important than cabinet in my estimation. All right? Because cabinet shuffle all the time. People resign from cabinet all the time. All right? They still go ahead and they're the MP, everything like that. I'm talking about parliament and the threshold for resigning from parliament. So you're going to say to me, well, if all it takes is an allegation or a criminal charge, I wonder if you hear yourself talking. If all it takes is criminal charges, anyway, if all it takes is criminal charges, 56 of them, for you to resign from parliament, then the government could just trump up charges against anybody, right? And that's true, yeah? You're assuming the government's completely corrupt, as is the police force, as is the independent deputy, director of public prosecutions, who's constitutionally independent. You're assuming they're all in collusion and they're all corrupt. Okay, fair enough. Then why doesn't it happen all the time? So, Wilbert Moss, who went to jail, who was an MP, who got kicked out of the house, he was a government MP. His own government charged him. Sean McQueenie was attorney general. He was the PLP attorney. Pinling appointed him. Pinling was prime minister. They charged him. He went to jail. All right? When Irvin Knowles had his issues, he was a government MP. So who trumped up charges against them? Okay? The first instance I saw of the government doing that to the opposition was with the last administration, and it wasn't even sitting MPs. Okay? So I don't know what all you're telling me, that this is the possibility is so rife that the government, the institutions of our system are so corrupt that a prime minister, a governing party, can just throw anything at anybody. So, minutes them charged no sitting MPs. Every sitting MP that got in an issue, from what I recall, in our past, tell me if I'm wrong, they were government MPs. So what you're talking about, and you could make an argument that Shane Gibson and them were just members of parliament and they were accused of doing things while they were governing members of parliament. That's fine. We could have that discussion. They were exonerated. But what you're talking about, in my recollection, doesn't happen. As far as I'm aware, Adrian Gibson is the first opposition member of parliament to be charged with corruption charges while sitting in parliament, as far as I am aware. So if you're saying that what's to stop a government from doing this, I guess nothing if all the systems are corrupt, but give me some examples of when that has been done before. So nobody wants to get make Hubert Minnis look bad more than the sitting government. The prime minister, he went on and on and on and on about the, he basically called them corrupt, the food program. Why didn't anyone charge Minnis, who authorized the food program, who was the minister of finance at the time? They've gone on and on and on and on and on about beaches and parks. So if the system is completely corrupt, as we're just assuming it is, why hasn't anyone charged Shannon Dawn Cartwright with a crime? All right. Now, the difference between the last administration was the attorney general was responsible for bringing charges against the three former parliamentarians. Since then, that same attorney general, our last parliament, made the director of public prosecutions independent. So you really can't say that the executive is doing anything. It's an independent director of public prosecutions. So, again, if any government could just trump up charges against the opposition, then why doesn't it happen more often? Why is this the first time in my recollection it has happened, since all the systems are corrupt? We assume. Okay, so I don't buy that. If you wanted everyone to resign, all you had to do is throw allegations at them. Because if that was the consideration of the government and all the systems were corrupt and working against the opposition, they would do so. They would have done it against everyone who served in the last administration. They would have trumped up nonsense against everyone who served in the last administration. Kwesi Thompson, Hubert Minnis, Shannon Don Cartwright. Who am I missing? Who else is there? Gibson, right? And there's Pintard. They would have trumped up charges against him too, right? They could have gotten them all if they were all corrupt and in collusion with one another. So I don't get that we're just going to assume the system's corrupt and leave everybody there even though they're charged with crimes. I don't get it. You're free to feel that way. I don't. Because what my experience and what I understand of history is that hasn't happened. Are people wrongly charged with crimes? All the time. Do we assume that the government is in collusion with the police and the courts and the independent director of public prosecutions to make the opposition look bad? I don't. They already look bad. So why didn't all of them get charged with crimes? Is my question, if that's such a real thing. All right? So those are my considerations. I think his ability to represent the people of Long Island is compromised, innocent or guilty, and he is innocent until proven guilty. All right? But bear in mind, innocent until proven guilty is a concept around which we build our systems, but it is a legal concept. All right? You're just assuming that there's public confidence that exists enough to say there's no reason he should resign. You see no reason. This person says, I see no reason for Adrian to resign at such time he's been disqualified from being an MP. See, listen. It says, we don't ask people to leave their jobs no matter the issue. Well, that's nonsense. See, I see no reason for him to resign until such time as he is disqualified from being an MP. You're missing it. If he's disqualified, there is no resignation. His seat's vacated. It's not up to him. Right now, if he's disqualified, this conversation is moot. Right now, the consideration is the Westminster Conventions, not the ultimate threshold in the Constitution to be removed. And so do those conventions mean something? Or are they just conveniences when we want to have them? So those are my thoughts. And I think that it's going to be a real slog for him to properly represent the people of Long Island, but those are my considerations. Now, I'll ask this question, and you may say there's some nuance to it, and please help me if you think that. If he were charged with 56 corruption-related matters, allegedly taking place while he was a member of parliament and while he was the executive chairman of a government corporation, before he nominated, would the FNM still allow him to nominate on their ticket? Like Michael Pintard says, innocent until proven guilty, right? All that good stuff. You know, Dwayne Sands is supporting it. If this had happened before he nominated, would you have felt that same way? Let me ask it another way. If anyone who was charged with numerous felonies sought a nomination from the FNM before the last election, would they just blithely brush away all consideration of those charges with relation to his capacity to properly serve the people of the constituency for which he wanted to nominate, is my question. Because again, what I hear is a lot of ego, a lot of I don't want to look bad. What I thought is it was about how best I can represent these people. And so the considerations that you thought were a plus when you went to represent the people, the drawbacks now, in terms of your representation of the people, should also be considered with your resignation. Again, a resignation is a consideration. So don't tell me, wait until the ultimate threshold and law kicks in, because there's no a resignation does not arise at that point. The resignation is your choice, your consideration. All right? So explain to me some other factors other than he hasn't been found guilty and charged in a year in prison, which would take the resignation out of his hand. Let me know. Or do you feel that, okay, well, if it's found guilty, then you resign. But there's still no legal prescription that he do so. But you would feel differently. I can understand that, maybe. You would feel differently if it was just a guilty verdict. I get it. I can get that. I can wrap my mind around that. All right? So those are my thoughts. I think he should. And again, I'm not saying that to be mean to him. Again, I know him. But if I'm going to speak honestly on the air as a journalist and a person who's commentating on public affairs and current affairs and not be totally disingenuous, that it's just okay for the stat quo to remain while all this is hashed out in the courts, then I got to say what I got to say. And you're free to disagree, but those are my thoughts. I think there are a lot of straw man arguments going on. And I'm getting to the nitty-gritty of, can you represent these people? Seriously? Those are my thoughts, all right? Listen, man. If there's not a higher standard for people who want to represent in the House of Assembly, then what is it that we're doing? If there's no consideration of honor and Westminster and all the stuff and conventions and traditions and what it means for my party and for the people I'm trying to represent beyond my own personal feelings about my personal circumstance, then what is it that we're doing? I'm not clear. All right, we got a phone call. Good afternoon. Oh, we got to take a break? Let's take a break. We'll come back with the phone calls. We may have to pick this up tomorrow because we're talking with Dr. Pinto, I believe, at 1. But I'm seriously considering these things. Like, a lot of what you're telling me is like, I don't want to look bad. That's what I hear a lot of. What I'm interested in is, can you properly represent the people of Long Island? Are you considering them in all of this? We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
So, what would you like to discuss?
Insurance, doc. It's so frustrating. I go to the mall for motor, drive to Bay Street to get a home quote, swing east to file a medical claim, then go west for a pensions appointment. Don't even get me started about life.
I'm going to prescribe CG Atlantic. They have all the insurance you're looking for.
Really? Thanks.
With all the insurance you need, we're like a doctor that doesn't waste your time and money. CG Atlantic. Good like that.
When it comes to picking a pharmacy that is convenient, reliable, and puts you first, only one name comes to mind, Wilmax Pharmacy, a team of trusted and trained pharmacists ready to serve and assist you with all your pharmaceutical and over-the-counter needs. We also carry beauty and hair products as well as household and everyday supplies. Open 7 days a week, 7:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. NIV drug plan is accepted. Cut down your wait time. WhatsApp new prescriptions and refills to 817-4067. Visit Wilmax Pharmacy today. Poinciana Drive, opposite University of the Bahamas. Call 323-1037.
Children are a blessing and should be treated with love and care. They deserve safe, stable, and nurturing relationships, a supportive family environment, and positive social networks. Mothers, fathers, teachers, aunties, uncles, neighbors, Bahamas, let's do our part to stop the physical, sexual, and mental abuse of our children. Make the calls, file the reports, save precious lives. Let's join hands and hearts and say no more to child abuse. This message was brought to you by CFAL, growing wealth for future generations.
Father's Day is not just about celebrating dads. It's about celebrating all that our dads are. Our protectors, our husbands, and our oldest friend. This Father's Day, don't forget to tell him, I'm so glad you're mine, with a gift from Bonneville Bones.
Bonneville Bones, a statement in fashion, a night on the town. Find us Bay Street, Marathon at Bonneville Bones.
This summer, Popeyes and Coke are taking you to the beach with our Ultimate Summer Beach Box. Purchase the box and enter to win day passes, water park passes, beach chairs, towels, and much more. Enjoy the Ultimate Summer Box, which has our iconic chicken sandwich, two chicken tenders, one side of choice, and a 32-ounce Coca-Cola beverage. With dipping sauce, perfect for a beach day. Fill out the skill question on your seat, then drop it into the entry box or enter online at Popeyes Bahamas Facebook page.
Chicken.
You do coffee your way.
Double shot, decaf, cappuccino.
Light roast, Colombian, no milk.
You do vacations your way.
Hiking boots, tent, mountains.
Five-star hotels and theater.
And now you can do insurance your way.
Online.
Email.
Chat.
WhatsApp.
Or in branch. For home, car, travel, boat, or business insurance, do it anyway with NUA Insurance agents and brokers. Visit NUAinsurance.com, call, or stop by a branch today.
The Water and Sewage Corporation advises customers residing in the areas of Blue Hill Road North, East Street, Palmdale, Shirley Street, Kemp Road, Village Road, Bay and West Bay Streets that the corporation will commence disconnection of water supply on Monday, June 20th, 2022 in the mentioned areas. To avoid disconnection of the water supply, customers whose accounts are in arrears or who have not honored their financial agreements are advised to see that their accounts are brought up to date or risk the disconnection of their water supply without further notice.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
I used to think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem, just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller. Until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
Good afternoon, Bahamas. Welcome back to the Revolution here on Guardian Radio. This person says, this is a good one, it says, your position is the correct one. The conventions of the parliamentary system are not concerned with guilt or innocence. That is a matter for the judiciary. The parliamentary system in this context is concerned with honor and the preservation of the democracy through its pillars being above reasonable or lawful reproach. Because we are so far removed from both knowing and guarding how those pillars should function, it's anything buck up goes now, and what we accept depends entirely on who is involved rather than what is right or wrong. Yeah, agreed. Says, hi, Juan, your diatribe on Gibson's resignation is very premature. The audacity of you to present on radio that he should resign with no proof that he is unable to fulfill his duties. Are you a magistrate? Did you complete a petition from a significant amount of Long Islanders requesting the move? I have spoken to a number of Long Islanders, actually. Is this even your MP? No, he's not, but it's my House of Assembly. If the answer is no, then you should proceed as if it's none of your business. You see how stupid people are nowadays, Arlington? This person says, proceed as if it's none of your business, right? The House of Assembly, a seat, this is how dumb this person is. The House of Assembly and the threshold for representation in the House of Assembly is none of our business, because this person clearly has a personal interest, to me it seems, in the matter. We're creating new thresholds now. I'm going to take a poll of Long Islanders before I say he should resign. I think he should resign because Westminster conventions say that the perception of any of this says he should step aside while he deals with it. Because it's about the people of Long Island. You're what you say is stupidity, okay? Don't worry about it. But I'm audacious. This is correct. All right? And they want to get personal. What they want to do is they want to attack you and get personal about you when you analyze an issue, right? So you didn't hear me talk about anything personal about Adrian Gibson, right? I didn't say anything personal about him. I talked about the ability to represent the people. I did not say he's innocent or guilty of anything. I'm just dissecting the arguments that people make. But you carry on with your stupidity. Know that I think you're stupid, and you should live your life with that knowledge. This says, this is why I think Pintard has completely lost his leader. I cannot believe he issued a statement of 100% support in face of the charges. It's ludicrous. Wish him the best, but not 100% support. Mm-hmm. It says he should have resigned yesterday. It says, great arguments, Juan. The only weakness I can see someone mounting a rebuttal against would be the separation of states argument. In practice, whatever government's in power chooses the AG and the commissioner. The psychology behind this is similar to the Westminster psychology, which basically gives the powers that be great influence over the person that they appoint. This being said, once it's decided, these institutions will most likely follow chain of command. Right. Well, if we're just to assume that the government's going to have its way with who gets charged anyway, that the executive is deciding that, then I don't know why we went through the exercise of having an independent director of public prosecutions. Like, I thought that was the exact reason that we did it. But I could be. Maybe we did it for fun. Maybe it was like we didn't have a lot going on, so we decided we'll do that. But you're going to be in your feelings, and it's okay, right? But be in your feelings, but attack my argument, right? Attacking me is superfluous, right? It's the sign of a weak argument and an addled mind, right? You can't deal with it logically, so you want to deal with it in an ad hominem manner. And I'm not doing that with you because I use my logic, all right? So we can argue logic. You arguing your opinion of me, that's for you to reconcile with yourself, all right? That's not something you and I can reconcile together through debate. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Good afternoon, Juan. How are you this evening?
I'm great. How are you?
Okay. Don't mind the naysayers. Continue to speak the truth.
I shall.
Okay? Yeah. Let this truth set you free. Let me ask you a question right quick. All right. Does this rule, and I don't remember what section, if you have a interest in a government contract, does that only apply to cabinet ministers?
Or no, that applies to all members of parliament.
So let me ask you a question. What is Mr. Gibson charged with? Interest in government contracts. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's no second thought about this whole issue. That's enough argument right there. Okay?
Okay.
All his charges is pertaining to government contracts. So we shouldn't have an argument on this particular issue at this time. It's just a matter of time for him to either resign or be asked to be removed of the House of Assembly. Thank you, man.
Thank you. Here's what I think. I think we're drifting into very comfortable personal arguments, and we are not considering the Westminster system and the overall integrity of the House of Assembly. And that happens. It's a small country, and we deal with these things on a personal level. But I'm not attacking anyone's personal character. I'm talking about what it means for our House of Assembly. Now, if any buck up go, any buck up go. And that's what y'all want, that's what y'all want. But I'm going to speak my mind. I'm not going to prevaricate on it. Someone said, stop using all these big words. Sure, I'm not going to waffle on it. All right? I think he should resign. All right? Not because I think he's guilty, but because I think that it does not serve the people of Long Island. Which is, to me, the reason you went to the House of Assembly. Again, there's ego, but it was about me, how I personally look. It might have been in someone's head. Maybe a lot of y'all had to go, I want to look good, I want to go to the House of Assembly. But if we're going through the letter of what it should be about representation. It says, what's happening with the investigation with Joe Beth Colby assaulting the police officer with her vehicle? That investigation has taken a mighty long time. Seems like they're hoping we forget. What's happening with the investigation with Jo Beth Colby is she didn't assault anyone with the police with a vehicle, and therefore there's nothing to investigate. There's video of her not doing it. It says, if honor is subjective, does that not expose the fundamental shortfall in any expectation of an honorable assembly? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It speaks to the wider House of Assembly and what the people who populate it believe the convention should be. I thought we were following the Westminster system. Good afternoon. I have no doubt whatsoever Mr. Gibson should resign right away, and if Mr. Pintard needs to know, he's being graded on how he deals with this matter. He says, I totally agree with you, Juan. Says, sir, the House of Assembly should have an established provision for circumstances such as this. That is, once charged, a leave of absence is automatic without pay until the case is completed. If found not guilty, the individual is reinstated without any loss of pay. It's very difficult to have him referred as honorable. I'm going to disagree with you on that. I disagree that there should be a provision in the House of Assembly if you are charged with a crime. I think, again, if we're operating honestly about what this should be about, the resignation is about your personal value system and how that aligns with Westminster conventions. So we could have rules and all this stuff like that, right? But the concept of honor and resignations is something that is a matter of values, all right? So rules are one thing, because there's a prescription in law already for him to be removed, not resign, removed. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about your honor, your values, with respect to the conventions and what you hold to be dear with the Westminster system. That's what I'm speaking to, all right? Let me see this one. It says, your view is yours, and you're certainly entitled to it. It really is an issue of his voters that makes the issue of resignation an issue. The voters' will should never be frustrated. I agree the voters' will should never be frustrated. So to me, it's an issue of his personal conviction as to whether the voters will be best served by him staying in the House of Assembly. Because the truth is this. If all the voters wanted him gone today, if every single person who voted for Adrian Gibson said publicly, went to the House of Assembly and stood in front of the speaker and go, we don't want him to represent us, they can't remove him. There is no prescription in law for anyone who voted for you to remove you from the House of Assembly. Not the majority of people, not every registered voter in the constituency. There's none. Once the voters vote, it's out of their hands. It's now in your hands as to what you believe best serves them. Now, you could say that I believe I still serve their interests. That's fine. But if all the people of Long Island, I saw they had a petition reportedly going around, if they all sign it, that amounts to nothing. But how they purportedly feel, it has no legal effect. It has no impact in law. They could just express to you how they feel. Now, you could come to me and go, all the people on Long Island, I talk to them. They all feel good. They're good about it. I'm going to keep on pushing. Now, that's on you. Me, I look at it a different way. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas. We'll be right back.
gentlemen, welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. Good to have you with us. We were talking about whether Adrian Gibson should resign. And I'm asking you, honestly, to talk to me about it, all right? Talk to me on the merits of the Westminster Convention, the merits of what you believe the threshold should be for that personal choice to come for a resignation. And I'm willing to have that discussion all day. If you just don't like me, and how dare I speak to the Adrian Gibson matter, then that ain't no real argument. That's just you lashing out. And I ain't got no time for it, okay? So, me personally, I would say, that's how I feel. The truth of the matter is that it has something to do with the people of the... Oh, is Dr. Pinto here? Oh, I didn't even know it was Dr. I thought it was Kermit. Is that Dr. Pinto? All right, we got to shelve our discussion. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Lord willing, we'll be here. All right, let's get Dr. Pinto in here. Come on, Dr. Pinto. That's my bad. I thought that was Kermit. How are you doing? Good afternoon. Have a seat. We're going to pick up our Long Island discussion tomorrow. All right? We'll deal with it tomorrow. You can revisit me, but now we're going to talk to Dr. Pinto. Dr. Pinto, welcome back to The Revolution. Close that door for me right there. So we get
it's always a pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Tight studio.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Absolutely. All right. So it's been a while since we talked to you. There's a lot going on. We're still getting COVID. We got vaccination rates are up here. And we've had, from my estimation, it seems more children who have had COVID since then. And I had to ask you, and I know we're talking about a variety of things, but I have to ask you, do you believe that children getting COVID may impact their development? Because you talked about erections, you talked about motility of sperm, et cetera, some of these things.
I mean, the pandemic and our understanding of it is an ongoing process. So we can't say what is going to happen in 5 years, 10 years, 15 mm-hmm. years. Obviously, in the short term, I'll speak on in regards to men. We can see it can affect your testosterone level. It can affect your sperm production. Mm-hmm. We hear about long COVID. We even have kids who have long COVID going on 6 months, 9 months. Adults and children who repeatedly test positive. They may be symptomatic. They may have minor symptoms. But our understanding is an ongoing process in terms of what is the long-term effect. There are very few people, I think, that are going to have long-term respiratory or neurological or cognitive effects from COVID-19. But obviously anything can possibly happen. But in the grand scheme of things, most people recover eventually from COVID-19. Including children. Mm-hmm.
I'll ask you this. Do you believe that, or have you found that as the COVID strains have gotten weaker, people have experienced fewer problems with regard to the erections, et cetera?
I think that in terms of hospitalizations, because of the Omicron strain, we don't see as many patients coming in specifically for COVID-19 symptoms, but incidentally, they might be found to have COVID-19, obviously, because of the pandemic. Every elective surgery, we need to check somebody with a COVID-19 PCR test. And incidentally, a lot of patients, unfortunately, have to delay their surgery, elective surgery, because they're COVID-19. Or patients come in shot or in a car accident, we have to take them for emergency surgery. We do the rapid test, COVID-19 PCR tests. They're found to be positive. Never had any symptoms. So we're seeing a lot of incidental findings of positive COVID. But in terms of overwhelming the hospital system, it's not what it was a year ago, thankfully. ICU are not overwhelmed. The healthcare system still is more strained because we're trying to catch up from what we couldn't do for the last 2 years. And it's difficult to get on top of that because mm-hmm. if you have, for example, in urology, if you have 200 cases that are pending, anytime we have a cancer case, anytime we have a case that's urgent regarding a child, we have to put that as a priority, and that just puts the backlog getting worse and worse and worse. But mm-hmm. we're doing our best. We're trying to catch up and do what we can. Obviously, the resources are stretched, but I've seen a lot of positive changes at Princess Margaret Hospital in the last 9 months, and I'm very for the first time in many years, very enthusiastic that things are going to turn around. Obviously, it's not going to happen in one day or in weeks and months, but slowly but surely, I see a lot of positive changes, particularly in the last 9 months.
Wow, that's interesting. I've heard some of that as well. I've also heard that the issues where they were treating so many people with COVID-19, they had to cancel all these elective procedures. There was a real challenge with colon cancer and that developing over the course of the pandemic, where people weren't getting treatment or being diagnosed. Have you experienced the same thing in terms of like prostate cancer, prostate issues?
Oh, very much so. So if we can't see patients in clinic, we can't surveil them. We can't do any workup for patients across the board. All cancers, breast cancer, colon cancer, prostate cancer, unfortunately cases that were in the range of being treated, organ-confined disease, are now we're finding, unfortunately, a year and a half, 2 years later, metastatic, or patients were just afraid to go to the hospital, even if they had. We have patients who were confirmed for clinic when clinic was going on. They just didn't come because of the fear of going to PMH with COVID-19 being at its height. So it's affected a lot of patients in terms of their primary care, in terms of surveillance for cancers. And yes, unfortunately, a lot of patients there are a lot of patients who have died because of COVID-19, not directly from COVID-19, but because indirect effects of the system being overwhelmed. The fear of many patients, they would tell me, why haven't we seen you in a year and a half? I was scared to come to PMH.
Right.
I was scared to do anything in my life. I wanted to stay home. I was afraid of getting COVID-19. I had a cousin who died, a brother who died. I was afraid for that. That was their primary fear. So they're not going to think about, all right, prostate cancer screening at that point. They're afraid for their life.
Right. They weren't willing to come out and risk it.
Correct.
So I know you're here to talk about different things, but I wanted to ask you, I recently had a physical, and I didn't have my physical. It was more than a year since I had a physical, and they do the PSA test, and that was fine. But they told me, due to my age, I got to go get a colonoscopy. And they were like, you got to do it, and you don't have to do it for another 5 to 10 years, depending on what is found. Do you stop at a certain – do you escalate the prostate exam at a certain point beyond the PSA test?
Yes.
Due to age, due to other things?
Very much so. So you need to triage every patient. Everybody is an individual. Patients have different risk factors. You have to look at first about family history. If you have first-degree relatives who have been diagnosed with prostate cancer, particularly before the age of 50, that ups your risk by at least 15%.
Wow.
If you have a strong family history going back generations for prostate cancer, uncles, grandfathers, brothers, cousins who have had prostate cancer, you may in fact have a genetic predisposition for developing prostate cancer, such as the BRCA gene, breast cancer-related gene. So if you have a gene mutation, BRCA gene mutation type 1 or type 2. For example, the BRCA gene 2 mutation, that increases your risk of getting prostate cancer by the age of 70 eightfold, which is considerable. So you're almost inevitably going to get prostate cancer in your lifetime. The gene type 1 mutation, that increases your chance by at least threefold. So as a whole, we as Bahamian men, we have all the risk factors of prostate cancer. The number one risk factor is advancing age. The older you are, the lot more likely you're going to get prostate cancer. The average age of prostate cancer diagnosis is going to be about 67, 68. But African ancestry is the second most critical risk factor, and we're primarily of African ancestry.
Yeah,
we're going to get a more aggressive form of prostate cancer. It's going to afflict us 6 or 7 years earlier than our other racial counterparts, including Caucasians, Asians, and Hispanics. So we have to be very diligent in picking up prostate cancer early. You may be able to get away with in a primarily Caucasian society in Europe with starting prostate cancer screening at 55 and only doing it for select individuals. But because we have such a high risk profile amongst our society, we got to do it every year starting at the age of 40. First, all we're going to do is a prostate-specific antigen blood test. There's a more specific blood test that we can do. Even if the prostate-specific antigen blood test is in the normal range, and it's age-specific as well. So the normal for a 40-year-old is going to be lower than that of a 65-year-old. Mm-hmm. We look at the change over time. So that's why we have to do it every single year. We can't miss 3 years, 4 years. So let's say your PSA is 1, and we want it to be less than 4. Let's say it's 1 year, and it's all of a sudden 2.5 the next year. There are many reasons that can cause it to be elevated after 1 year, but we have to be more diligent. We'll do more specific blood tests. There is a urine RNA test that came out in the last 2 years where we can pick up whether someone's going to get prostate cancer in the next 5 years. And if they're going to get prostate cancer, are they going to get low risk or more aggressive forms of prostate
from
cancer?
Urine.
Yeah, just from the urine RNA test. So in terms of our ability to pick up prostate cancer, we've gone to the other extreme when we do have a proper screening system going on where patients are compliant and they actually follow up with screening every year, where we have an overabundance of diagnosis of clinically insignificant prostate cancer, where it's not going to do any harm. It's not of any clinical importance other than we like to know that, yes, you have prostate cancer. In many cases, we can actively surveil someone for 6, 8, 10, 12 years before we need to cure you. So we have so many tools in our armament, including imaging. If we have any concern at all, before we even in the past, PSA is elevated, we rush and do biopsies. It's found in many studies conclusively that at least 70% of prostate biopsies were unnecessary. They didn't detect any clinically significant prostate cancer. So now we have imaging such as MRI. We have 3T MRI. We have PSMA PET CT scan where it's very highly sensitive and specific. It can determine whether there's any lesion of suspicion, and we can use that information to do targeted biopsies to get a proper diagnosis if you do, in fact, have prostate cancer. So particularly in my private practice, I'm diagnosing prostate cancer all the time, and it's clinically insignificant. And I'll also just address the elephant in the room. Again, I'll emphasize that the American Urology Association, the European Association of Urology, have determined that as a protocol for first-line prostate cancer screening with patients who do not have increased risk profile, a digital rectal exam, the embarrassing digital rectal, has no benefit. So all we need to do is blood tests. You could do more specific blood tests. There's urine RNA tests that's available. And then we also have imaging widely available right here in Nassau.
Excellent. Okay, so June is Men's Health Awareness Month. And we've talked about this before. One of the major indicators, well, firstly, you should get regular screenings, physicals, checkups. Bahamian men are reluctant to go to the doctor a lot of times until something's killing them. I've had a shoulder injury for a long time, and I've yet to seek therapy for it because I'm okay. Like, when my shoulder stops working, I'll probably be like, time to go see the doctor. But one of the indicators that something's wrong, if you're a man, has to do with your genitals and how they're working and how they're operating. One of the other things that you say that men should check for are their testosterone levels. So tell us about that. Like, how do you determine something is wrong, or do you just go to the doctor just in case?
Well, you have to look at what's important, and knowledge is key. So you have to be aware, and the community needs to be aware. For example, prostate cancer, it's the number one cancer in this country. Far, and in terms of numbers, the numbers far exceed that of breast cancer. So it's the number one.
Really?
Yeah, it's the number one cancer in this country. Estimated 1 in 6 to 1 in 7 Bahamian men or residents are going to get prostate cancer in their lifetime. That's an overwhelming number of patients. We have at least 220 people in this country diagnosed with prostate cancer every year. At least 100 die every year of prostate cancer. When prostate cancer is probably the easiest cancer to detect, when it's at early stage, when it's at a curable stage. And we have so many ways that we can cure you. We don't even necessarily need surgery. And everything is minimally invasive. So prostate cancer is not a death sentence. So when we talk about the tragedy of violence, when we talk about the tragedy of so many patients, so many persons dying in motor vehicle accidents, preventable disease. We're looking at such things as prostate cancer. You don't need to be dying of prostate cancer. You don't need to be suffering for 7-8 years with renal failure or issues where your spine is riddled with prostate cancer, metastatic disease, and you're basically in a wheelchair until you die. You don't have to become a burden to your loved ones, financially, emotionally, and everything else. When we can cure your prostate cancer in a one-hour procedure with little to no recovery, little to no pain, you can maintain your erections at a high rate, you can maintain your urinary continence at a very high rate. It can just be a little small bump in the road. But many men have this misconception that prostate cancer is a death sentence, and they avoid any screening related to prostate cancer when, I'm just telling you now, we have blood tests, that's all you need. So we need to start being very diligent in picking up prostate cancer. We need to get your prostate blood tests every single year, starting at the age of 40. If you have a very high risk profile, we start at the age of 35 and every year after that. Mm-hmm. And we can always pick up prostate cancer early if you're coming to see us every year. Let's say we have metastatic disease, which unfortunately, I'll look at the other side of it from the government system. Far too many men, I can't remember the last time I actually was able to diagnose someone who was of curable state in the government system. It's the opposite. For many reasons, but what is the consequence of that? We're just going to give you palliative care. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to lower your testosterone to as low as possible. That's going to ruin your life. You're going to put on 25 pounds. You're going to get hot flashes. You're not going to get another erection again. You're going to feel lethargic. It's going to age you 10 years in an instant. And that's just going to give you palliative time on this earth. It's not going to cure you. So if we can pick up prostate cancer early and we can do it at such a excellent rate that we can pick it up when it's clinically insignificant, then please don't be afraid of a blood test. Yeah. So yeah, in terms of colon cancer, the starting age for a colonoscopy is shifted from 50 to 45. In many cases, when you have early colon cancer, you're not going to have any symptoms, minimal to none. You may not have any change in bowel habits. So it's always, particularly because we have a large number of persons who get colon cancers in this country, we need to be screened.
Yeah, I think, and what happens too is a lot of people wait until they're older before they start really checking. Because when, like a few years ago, like I decided I'm gonna change my health and everything. What happened was, as I got older and I hit like 40, I started noticing people that I knew like dying, right? And that's not something you really see in your 20s or 30s unless it's like something extraordinary, like a violent incident or a car accident or something like that. But I started seeing people I know like drop down dead, right? 5 years old me, 6 years old me, and I'd see their pictures on the news. And you start seeing pictures on the news, on the announcement channel, and there's, oh, this person's 43 years old. And you're like, what happened, right? And so I thought to myself, I got to do better. I got to make sure that I'm taking care of myself. A lot of Bahamians, one, don't, particularly men, don't want to go to the doctor because they don't want to hear bad news. Two, they think it's not something that they can afford as well. So how does that work if people are saying, well, I can't get my prostate cancer screening because I don't have a private physician for me to go to get the blood test?
Well, I think the government really have to be commended. There are not many countries in the world where you can say that primary care is free. So all you got to do is sign up. You can get your medications for free. You can get 3 monthly visits to your doctor. You can get any imaging that's necessary in terms of falls under primary care for free. So if you're diagnosed with diabetes or hypertension or high cholesterol, or you need medication for enlarged prostate or prostate cancer, the list goes on and on, you don't have to pay for it. So there's no excuse. All you got to do is take the time, and you need to take the time for yourself, for your loved ones, for your, not only you want to have longevity, years on this earth, you want good quality of years on this earth. For many men, as a urologist, it comes to the point where most Bahamian men, the most important organ we know what we're talking about is a male organ. So they'll suffer for years for whatever this and that, but when their erections fail, they'll go and borrow the blue tablet from this one, they'll go to the gas station and get some unregulated enhancing natural supplement that can do untold harm to them. Mm-hmm. But they're not looking at what are the root cause. In many cases, erectile function is a good snapshot of your general well health, your well-being. So if you have an issue with diabetes, high cholesterol, atherosclerosis, hypertension, low testosterone, obesity, one of the first things that's going to be affected is going to be your erection. So yeah, I'm glad to see that every single day I diagnose someone with diabetes for the first time, or hypertension, or high cholesterol, or because there's a very strong correlation with early heart disease, the coronary vascular disease, and erectile dysfunction. I'm, in many cases, have diagnosed with someone with something early. So probably in 20 years, they would have had a stroke. They might have had a myocardial infarction, a heart attack. So listen to your body, but in many ways, you also have to know that you're not going to have symptoms from many things, including prostate cancer, until it's too late. Mm-hmm. Early prostate cancer, in most cases, has no symptoms whatsoever. If you're peeing frequently, urgently, in many cases, statistically speaking, it's going to be related to benign disease, benign prostate hyperplasia, which is going to afflict every man as he advances in age, probably 50% of 50-year-olds, 60% of 60-year-olds. When you go into 70s and 80s, 80-year-olds is going to be 80%, 90% are going to have some amount of incomplete bladder emptying, a weak urinary stream, waking up a lot in the night to pee, can't delay urination, living their life with a cup in the car because they can't even pull over the side of the road. I have so many patients who are in a uniform branch, and they said because they're representing the police, the defense force, they can't even pull over to the side of the road behind a tree to urinate. So it can affect your self-esteem, affect you socially, professionally. You can't be on a casual date because every 15 minutes you got to go to urinate. You're scared to have a glass of water if you're going to be out in traffic because you know you're not going to be able to reach the bathroom. So don't let the bladder control your life. I've always said that. If you have an early element of erectile dysfunction, every man's going to get some amount of erectile dysfunction in their lifetime. Don't suffer in silence. You're not alone. As a urologist, everything I've heard it all. Everything that's said to me is done in confidentiality. And we have so many ways that we can get you to rise again, no matter what. Mm-hmm. You have an anorexia in 15 years, we can get you to rise again. There's first line, second line, third line, fourth line treatments. No matter what, you'll always rise again.
So let me ask you this. And obviously, when you have an issue, you want to go check it out and you want to make sure that you don't have an issue. But I found that, and correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I'm a cynic, but I get the sense of we've abandoned trying to teach people healthy habits when they're younger, and we've abandoned confronting these discussions about weight, BMI, diet, exercise, substance abuse, right? We've abandoned those, and we've said that we're not going to focus on that. We're going to focus on the other end. So by the time all those things are already impacting you, we're going to focus on what we can do then. And is that a mistake? And can we tell people like what they can do to ward off a lot of this?
Well, that's part of the NHI program. We're trying to be proactive. We're trying to address any non-communicable diseases before it becomes something that ends up you being on dialysis, ends up with you having chronic erectile dysfunction, et cetera. So we have free healthcare at that primary level. Now we have, thank you again, kudos to the government for having catastrophic care. So hopefully we're not going to hear about all these cookouts for someone who has cancer and needs treatment. Mm-hmm. But there's no excuse. You need to address the fact that even as a child, if you see that your child is not getting exercise, if they're overwhelmed, we need to address that. Childhood obesity is a national crisis, and it starts from there. So then they're going to develop diabetes many times in their teenage years. They're going to develop hypertension in their 20s. And this is a lifelong battle that could have been prevented if we could have combated obesity when someone was 6 years old, 8 years old, 10 years old, with healthy lifestyle changes, behavioral modifications. So there's no such thing as it's too early for us to address anything. The earlier, the better.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right. I got some people who are messaging in. This says, thanks, Juan. You and the doc have me scared. Please give me this info. No, I am. I'm being deathly serious here. As you and what's unfortunate for me and why I try to tell people is I didn't start focus on it until I got older. Right. So here's the conversation you're going to have with yourself. When you hit 40, at least I have with myself, right? So when you hit 40, you start to realize, if you look at the life expectancy of a Bahamian man, you have less time left than you've had so far, right? And so you want the time that you have left to be as comfortable, as effortless, to live as healthily as possible. If that means sacrificing some things, you'll do so. If that means changing some behaviors, you will do so. And so these conversations are productive because not only hopefully will people who are in my age bracket and older get the message that they need to be very careful about these things as they age. But people who are younger will now start to consider their futures, all right? Because you will get older if you're lucky, but that also comes with certain consequences if you don't live well.
Yeah, well, knowledge is key. That's why I like to try to take the time to address the community on every level. But, for example, we'll talk about what plagues men. What is the obviously erectile dysfunction.
Right.
But we talk about things like hair loss,
right,
which is very common in this society. We talk about prostate cancer. There is a medication. It's in the class of 5-alpha reductase inhibitors, where we know it
for
as...
For hair loss?
Proscar, finasteride, dutasteride, Avodart. It can reduce your chance of getting low-risk prostate cancer by 25%.
I'm sorry.
And it can address the fact that you can prevent getting male pattern baldness. Just taking one pill a day.
Hair loss is connected to prostate
Correct.
Cancer?
Correct. It's related to testosterone and its precursor of testosterone, dihydrotestosterone. So if you can take a pill once a day, prevent male pattern baldness, it can also significantly reduce your chance of getting low-risk prostate cancer by 25%. It's not inevitable. You don't have to lose your hair. You don't have to get prostate cancer.
All right, we got a phone call. Let's do the phone call. All right. Put your headphones on right there. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello?
Yes, good afternoon.
Trying to get the doctor number.
Well, I don't like to come and advertise myself privately on these venues, but I'm a consultant at Princess Margaret Hospital in Urology, so you can go to any local clinic, Family Island or New Providence, and get a referral to see me at Princess Margaret Hospital. If you wish to see me privately, my information is readily available online.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so call Oak Tree Medical Center.
Wait, what you said?
Oak Tree Medical Center. Ask for Dr. Pinto.
Oak Tree
Medical Center.
Where it is?
That's in Palmdale.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Okay, right opposite Bahamas, the new Bahamas Medical Supply Place.
Right.
Is Oak Tree.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much, sir.
No, you're fine. Why is that a thing? Like, I had Dr. Sparkman Ferguson on here, who's a dentist, right? And he was talking about how if they're advertising, they're probably not a real dentist. And the lawyers come on and go, well, I can't give out my number because it's against the law, apparently. I don't understand it. Why? Why can't you advertise your services?
Well, I mean, they're regulating bodies that have rules and guidelines in place. But in terms of, I'm here basically to impart information, trying to save lives, trying to improve the quality of life of individuals. I'm not trying to benefit personally. I have a very large patient base. I don't really need a larger patient base, but I want to make sure when I do see patients that I can pick up, for example, prostate cancer at an early stage, not an advanced stage. Mm-hmm. When I see someone with erectile dysfunction, they can tell me that they've only been suffering for 2 months, not 2 years.
Mm. Yeah, because you need to do this because men will just lie, right?
Very much so.
We will go to our grave lying about this rather than just admit that there's an issue because there's so much that's built around it. It just is what it is, right? From your young kid, you'll never tell your friends you have a problem. You're never going to go to your friend, hey, give me Dr. Pinto. Oh, what's wrong with you? You know, I don't have that problem, right?
So, and in many cases, your friend, your cousin, right, your brother has exactly the same
right.
issue.
Right, and we'll all just lie to each other that everything's fine, everything's golden. And so you got to have public education for people to go, okay, fine, I'm not alone. I'll go talk to the doctor. It's safe for me to talk to the doctor. I'll go do that.
Even another taboo subject, obviously erectile dysfunction in itself is a taboo subject, but premature ejaculation is the most common form of erectile dysfunction. Mm-hmm. 1 in 3, 33% of men of all ages.
Right.
20s, 30s, going on up, are going to have some amount of premature ejaculation. 1 minute and they're done, and it's very frustrating. And obviously, they don't want to admit to it, but it can affect their life, it can affect their relationships, it can affect their self-esteem. And it doesn't have to define them. We can do things to get you 15, 20 minutes, just like that. Mm-hmm. So why are you suffering needlessly?
Yeah.
There's absolutely no reason for that. There's no shame in seeking help, and it's always in a confidential environment anyway.
Absolutely.
It can change your life. Change your life for the better.
I don't know about 20 minutes. We got jobs and stuff. Let me see. Juan, I'm kidding. Kindly ask your guests why women don't experience pattern baldness like men do.
Well, they do. They do. And that's also another taboo subject. There's alopecia related. There are many types of alopecia for many reasons that a lot of women suffer needlessly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's not a testosterone thing.
It's not, no.
All right, that's a different thing. Ask Dr. Pinto if doctors and surgeons are pushing the PHA and the Minister of Health to upgrade some of the invasive surgical equipment procedures at the public hospitals to cut down on the stay and the side effects. Some procedures appear to be 120 years old.
Yeah, so I always try to reassure the public that we have every subspecialty in medicine in this country. In this small little country, you have every subspecialty, from medical to dental. We have the expertise. Many of us, I've traveled the world trying to enrich myself with knowledge, with skills, so that you don't have to go to Florida. You don't have to go to Atlanta. You don't have to go to New York to get cutting-edge, state-of-the-art treatment. We can provide it here. And across the board, for the most part, we can do so. Obviously, my ego will never prevent me from referring someone abroad for something that you, even in a major city, someone might not see for 10 years, and I've never seen or maybe saw once. Obviously, I'm going to send you to an expert who sees that all the time. That might be a subspecialist, for example, subspecialty expertise for something that I don't do routinely. So always want the best care for my patients, ego aside. But I can say with great confidence, we have all the subspecialties here. We have all the state-of-the-art, even for urology. I've seen the transition in the last several years that we have more and more of the state-of-the-art equipment in terms of imaging, in terms of minimally invasive. So modern urology is based on non-invasive, minimally invasive surgery. We have all the tools and armament, whether it's laparoscopic surgery, whether it's outpatient. So vast majority of urology in terms of surgical procedures are outpatient. There's minimal to no recovery. You don't need to be in hospital. I've had many conversations with the present Minister of Health. I'll call him now. He'll pick up or he'll call me back. And he's very proactive in trying to getting equipment to us so that we can provide state-of-the-art care, minimally invasive care. So that's an ongoing thing. That's why I'm so positive in terms of what's happening in the public health system, what's happening at PMH. We have great support from the highest levels of the Ministry of Health, from the minister on. Even I'll say the Prime Minister is very concerned in terms of trying to get elective surgery done in an expeditious manner. And I'm very positive for the first time in many years that the PMH is turning around.
Yeah, I've heard that from several doctors. Like, we'll see. But I heard, you know, it used to be kind of a horror show. So now that it's not...
Things are slowly but surely improving. It's a difficult task, but eventually we're going to get there.
Says, hi, Mr. McCartney. Ask the doctor what causes premature ejaculation. I need some help, please.
There's so many reasons for premature ejaculation. That in itself can be a two-hour discussion. Mm. It can be emotional, psychological. It can be a physical, even in terms of it's just common sense for a layperson. If you haven't had ejaculation in 3 months, you're obviously it's going to be more difficult to sustain erection during sexual intercourse or otherwise. So it has many things that are in interplay, but essentially I'll say with great confidence and surety that we can get you as many minutes as you want. In fact, I've had some patients even complaining. Mm-hmm. Wife is saying, 40 minutes, come on now.
Yeah, I got dinner or something else going on. Okay, this says, yes, one fun fact. Some of the approved medications for treating prostate cancer were discovered because of trials they conducted, and men would report hair growth. Another fun fact, for the same reason you'll find some hair loss medications being only recommended for men. Ah, okay. Excellent. Interesting. So isn't that how they figured out Viagra? Or was it a blood pressure trial?
Correct.
Something like a hair
Correct.
Loss or a
Correct.
Blood pressure trial.
Correct.
One of the two. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm here to say you don't have to lose your hair. You don't have to suffer a male pattern baldness. You don't have that that loss of confidence. You don't have to live your life with a baseball cap. You don't have to obviously die of prostate cancer. You don't have to have the bladder control your life. You don't have to be obese. Many studies in the last 10 to 12 years have shown that there's a very strong correlation between low testosterone, being overweight, obesity, obstructive sleep apnea, metabolic syndrome, mm-hmm. erectile dysfunction. There's a bi-directional, tri-directional link between all of them. So if you have one, it's going to cause the other. It's going to cause the first cause to be even worse. So most men who are obese have obstructive sleep apnea. Most men who have obstructive sleep apnea have low testosterone. The low testosterone causes the obstructive sleep apnea to get worse. The sleep apnea causes you to have worse erections and have worsening obesity. So if we can address the root cause, in many cases, we have to obviously address your diet, behavioral modifications, get exercise. We got to make sure that we treat your cholesterol. If you have any diabetes or hypertension, treat that as well. But if low testosterone is the root cause, we need to safely treat you with low testosterone. Studies have shown you can lose 50 pounds. Mm-hmm. You can get spontaneous erections again. You can have a good night's sleep. You can not have the obstructive sleep apnea.
Okay, we got to take a break. We got a few more things. And actually, I do want to talk about this thing when we come back. And this one says, if you have early ejaculation, stop watching porn. Problem solved. That sounds funny, right? But there's many studies have shown that pornography is addictive and could be detrimental to your actual sexual relationships with humans.
There's a medical term. It's pornography-induced erectile dysfunction. It's very prominent in younger persons. So essentially, when you look at the pleasure centers and achieving an orgasm and even an erection, you can essentially rewire your brain. And you need to have that visual pornography to get an erection. The relationship with a female, it's just not going to happen. So yes, pornography can actually cause you to have horrible erectile dysfunction. And many late teenagers, 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds, are hampered with this, and they don't understand why.
Yeah, this is a different universe than the one I grew up in. Like, the access to it, the sheer level of it, I don't understand how kids grow up with any sort of normalcy. Okay, we got to go to a break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Frank, what you doing?
Looking at some new insurance options, Uncle Joe.
Insurance? You should ask me. I've got a guy on Collins Avenue who does my motor insurance. My home policy is through a lady I work with. Now, Johnny from the gym, he's going to hook me up with medical and life. Now, for pensions, I'd like to spread that one around a little bit.
Or I could call CG Atlantic. They do all of that.
With all the insurance and pensions cover you need in one place, we're like an uncle that doesn't give you bad advice. CG Atlantic. Good like that.
Here we go. J.S. Johnson Insurance. Best reliable service we've been on the scene, protecting since 1919. J.S. Johnson Insurance has the best, always, you're always covering me. J.S. Johnson Insurance, peace of mind.
How important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services, from click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options. We're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
They're playing basketball.
That's right, boys and girls. Get ready to play basketball at the 34th Annual Jeff Rogers Basketball Camp, July 4th through July 29th at the Kendall G.L. Isaacs Gym, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. daily. So parents, get your boys and girls ages 5 through 18 registered now. Applications available at the South Bahamas Conference of Seventh-day Adventists, Tonic Williams Darling Highway, and at the registration desk at Campsite Kendall G.L. Isaacs Gym. Special appearances by NBA players, legends, and coaches. So get your boys and girls registered now, ages 5 through 18, for the 34th Annual Jeff Rogers Basketball Camp, July 4th through July 29th.
At Ron's Electric Motors, they repair and rewind all major brands of electric motors, including water pumps, generators, and generators back end, welding machines, electric lifts, air compressors, battery chargers, and more. They're equipped to handle up to 850 kilowatts and rewind up to 450 horsepower motors. They're conveniently located on the corner of Wolf and Clarence Roads and are open weekdays 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturdays till noon. They offer 24 hours emergency assistance. You can reach them at 242-356-0249.
You do coffee your way. Double shot, decaf, cappuccino.
Light roast, Colombian, no milk.
You do vacations your way.
Hiking boots, tent, mountains.
Five-star hotels and theater.
And now you can do insurance your way.
Online.
Email.
Chat.
WhatsApp.
Or in branch. For home, car, travel, boat, or business insurance, do it anyway with NUA insurance agents and brokers. Visit NUAinsurance.com, call, or stop by a branch today.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
The King wants you to take a walk on the tangy side with the all-new Zesty Whopper collection at Burger King Nassau. Enjoy the classic Zesty Whopper with two types of cheese, zesty sauce, and crispy onions stacked on 100% flame-grilled beef. Or go zesty on our plant-based Whopper and crispy chicken. All three are saucy, crunchy, and full of flavor, and only available at Burger King Nassau. Visit any of our seven locations and enjoy a Zesty Whopper as a combo or as part of the King's Feast at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Father's Day is not just about celebrating dads. It's about celebrating all that our dads are. Our protectors, our husbands, and our oldest friend. This Father's Day, don't forget to tell him, "I'm so glad you're mine," with a gift from Bonneville Bones.
Bonneville Bones, a statement in fashion, a name on the town. Find us Bay Street, Marlin Marathon at Bonneville Bones.
The Water and Sewage Corporation advises residents of Pinecrest Drive, South Beach East, that the corporation will commence improvement work on Tuesday, May 31st, 2022, for a duration of 5 weeks, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. daily. During this period, there may be some interruption in the water supply, road closure, and detours around the work area. Motorists are advised to avoid the area where possible. The corporation apologizes for any inconvenience caused and appreciates your support as they work to improve their level of service.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon, Bahamas. Welcome to the Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. We're here talking with Dr. Gregory Pinto. June is Men's Health Awareness Month, and a lot of the issues that men have stem from, urological concerns. And that's one of the indicators of your health. He was talking about the other indicators of your health. Maybe you're suffering from low testosterone, et cetera. This says, yes, I don't understand what that one is saying. All right. In any event, this says, wants your info. This wants your info. All right.
Well, I have a website, urologycarebahamas.com.
And they can go check that out. All right, urologycarebahamas.com. All right, so you're telling me that there's a lot of, you're finding bladder cancer, and you're finding, like, men who have blood in their urine? I don't know. I think I'll pass out if I saw blood in my urine.
So blood in the urine, obviously, is something that you should never ignore. There are many reasons for it. For the vast majority of cases, it's a benign cause. It can be as simple as you having a kidney stone or... It could be related to something as simple as a hemorrhagic cystitis, a very bladder infection. But you don't want to dismiss it as something that is not anything to be concerned about, and it keeps recurring. So I see a lot of patients, unfortunately, diagnosed with bladder cancer, but they've been treated with antibiotics for 2 years, 3 years, and then coincidentally it may resolve, because most of the time when you have blood in the urine, it's not a constant thing. Occasionally is. But it'll come and go. So to just dismiss blood in your urine as having an infection is absolutely the worst thing to do. You have to make sure that we diagnose what the cause is. Don't have that fear that it's automatically cancer. In fact, in very few cases it is. But if you have the risk factor of cigarette smoking, if you have the risk factor of even social cigar smoking, it may be an indication of early bladder cancer. So... we need to, if we can pick up bladder cancer, just like prostate cancer, we can have an excellent cure rate. But if you allow bladder cancer to progress and advance, go beyond the confines and locally advance or have metastatic disease, then your prognosis is not going to be a good one. Wow. So blood in the urine, never ignore. Mm-hmm. Always seek medical consult and get a thorough workup.
Some people get blood in the ejaculate?
Blood in the ejaculate is it's a horrifying thing. Imagine that. It's called hemospermia or hematospermia. So for the vast majority of cases, again, that is an innocuous cause. It's a benign cause. There's nothing to be greatly concerned. In many cases, it's related to a very rich blood supply to your prostate. So your prostate gland contributes some of the fluid for your ejaculate. If, let's say, you have a robust supply of capillaries, that during sexual intercourse, you may have a rupture of one of those capillaries in your prostate, you may have some blood in your ejaculate or in your sperm. And obviously, it's going to horrify you.
Yeesh.
So obviously, don't ignore that as well. That might be a sign of a prostate cancer. Although, statistically speaking, it's just as I mentioned at the onset of what I was speaking about, it's more than likely just having a very rich blood supply to your prostate. Mm-hmm. We need to work you up, make sure it is, in fact, a benign cause. Mm-hmm. And if you just have a very hypervascular rich blood supply to your prostate, we can give you medication to reduce the likelihood of that ever happening again. And obviously, it's a very horrifying event for the male and for the female partner.
Boy, I mean, I'm not squeamish about blood normally, because I get nosebleeds sometimes. Like, I used to get frequent nosebleeds when I was a kid, and I still get them sometimes. But I don't think I can handle blood in the ejaculate. All right, cranberry supplements, good for urinary health?
Yes. I'm not going to say that you have to live your life drinking cranberry juice all day or having a tablet every day. But
you only got to tell them one thing, and that's all they ever do.
But particularly, so for example, women who have, and men who have recurrent urinary tract infections, we got to determine what is the cause of the urinary tract infection, particularly for men, where anatomically they're not predisposed to get urinary tract infections. In many cases, it's related to incomplete bladder emptying, or maybe related to you having a kidney stone, which the stone itself is a nidus for bacteria, where bacteria is just going to cling to it. You may have a bladder stone. But if you're not emptying your bladder, you're walking around with a residual of urine day in and day out, bacteria is going to proliferate. You're going to keep getting infections. Mm. Antibiotics might clear it. You're going to get it back in a month. You're going to get it back in 6 weeks. We need to treat the root cause. And if you're not emptying your bladder, you can have irreversible changes to your bladder itself. You can have back pressure on your kidneys that can lead to acute kidney injury or even chronic renal failure. I've seen too many men, even relatively young, 40s, 50s, who are on dialysis because they were never emptying your bladder. And if you go for a period of several months, if you're not emptying your bladder, you can have irreversible damage to your kidneys and your bladder. Your bladder can even lose its ability to contract. It can be almost become like a flaccid balloon, losing its elasticity. So it's because basically it's not functional. So listen to your body. If you're not emptying your bladder, if you keep getting your urinary tract infection, men or women or even children, let's treat the root cause. Just giving you antibiotics all the time is not the answer. It's just treating the symptom.
Okay, excellent. And I got to ask you, last but not least, are you still doing the penile implants, the bionic penis, all this other stuff like that? I know a lot of that slowed up because of the pandemic.
I am doing it. And I am doing it as medical tourism. That's fourth-line treatment for erectile dysfunction. As I always say, that you can always rise again no matter what. If there's no nerve supply, there's no blood supply to your male member, we can always get you back on track, even if it comes to the last resort of giving you a penile implant. And if you do get a penile implant, the modern technology allows us to give you an erection at the push of a button for as long as you want, with the same sensation, same ability to ejaculate, same ability to have a child. You can change your life around. You can go from, I always use this, it might be crude to say it, you can go from a dud to a stud just in a minimally invasive outpatient 40-minute procedure where you're not going to single cut to your male member. Wow. And even in its flaccid state, a new partner or even your existing partner is not even going to feel that you have the device.
Okay. Well, June, Men's Health Awareness Month. This is certainly a major aspect of men's health. And, you know, the urological system is often, the male organ is often, like you say, the canary in the mine shaft, you know, tell you if something else may be wrong, if the canary's not, you know, surviving. So you guys go get checked out. Again, sign up for NHI. Primary care is free. All your blood work, all that stuff, that's free. You get the physical, that's free, and you can get medication if you have any of a number of ailments, also for free. So we don't have the best healthcare system on the planet here, but we do have help for you, and a lot of it is for free. Dr. Pinto, you can reach at Bahamas Urology Care.
UrologyCareBahamas.com.
Yeah. All right, and you can also find it at Oak Tree Medical Center and Family Medicine Center at Blake Road as well.
And obviously Princess Margaret Hospital, yes.
And Princess Margaret Hospital as well. So good to have you with us. Great talking to you as always. Hopefully more people reach out to you.
Well, hopefully we've saved some lives and improved the quality of life of a lot of members of our society.
Absolutely. Every time I've heard of anyone with prostate cancer, it's a very long ordeal that's very painful.
And it's an unnecessary death.
Extremely taxing.
So 100 men shouldn't be dying every year of prostate cancer when we can cure you at an excellent cure rate. The 5-year cancer-specific survival for early prostate cancer is 100%.
Wow.
At 10 years, it's 98%, 99%. Prostate cancer is a curable disease that we can pick up early.
Okay, excellent. Well, thanks, Dr. Pinto, for stopping by. Great talking with you, as always.
Always my pleasure. Thank you very much.
If we, if the master tarries, we'll be back tomorrow. You guys have a great day, Bahamas.